A1.
Number 18A.
Now, we want to go a step further in investigating the interpretation of the Bible and see that the Bible really is the book of life and therefore is never out of date. See, if we go out from the standpoint that behind all these symbols stands the divine principle, and the divine principle is always eternal, and it's the same principle for every man and for every age, then we can never say that the Bible is out of date, but we must see how to interpret the Bible, to see that really that which is of only interest is to recognize behind the symbols the principle, to be interested in the way this divine principle was symbolized in a certain age. That interest is really of no great avail. It's not interesting to know how God, say, as mind or as spirit, interpreted himself in a certain age through a certain symbol. The symbol doesn't matter. It only mattered to that age, but it doesn't matter to us. To us matters what is behind the symbol, because that is eternal. And it matters only how the divine principle operates. This is then symbolized through the symbols of an age, which is not of great interest, but the how this principle operates, that is of interest. So you could see that the divine principle, say, that interpret itself in a certain way through the symbolization that was used by, say, the prophet Hosea, that principle is operating today and still operating in the same way as in the time of Hosea, because it's the eternal principle which always interprets itself through its fundamental categories and laws. But at the time, Hosea symbolized it through the symbols which his contemporaries could understand, which means that if we were to teach that same principle which was operating in a specific way in Hosea's time, if we would symbolize that today, we could symbolize it in our metaphysical language, so that the text we would give to it today would look very, very, very different from the text of Hosea. So the text as such is of secondary importance, but the underlying principle, its laws, its order, its system, that is of eternal interest. So today we could describe and symbolize in our language of the synonymous terms of the four sides of the holy city, in the language of the ideas of mind, the ideas of spirit, the ideas of soul, could write the very same thing in meaning as in the time of Hosea, without having an outward resemblance between Hosea's text and our text. Only if we understand that, then really we begin to realize that the Bible is a book of life. So when we have a correct knowledge of the metaphysical language of today, which symbolizes the language of spirit to our age, and have the symbol simplism of our language, which uses more abstract and more defined terminologies, namely the symbols which symbolize the ideas of mind, the ideas of spirit, the ideas of soul, etc. If we know those ideas, then we can translate the symbols of Hosea into the symbols of the Christian Science language and state that which Hosea, say, has written in the metaphysical language of Mrs. Eddy. But we can only do that if we really have a defined and classified concept of the various metaphysical symbols of today. So, in this way, we begin to realize that the Bible is a textbook for us which is not out of date. What then are our present findings of the Bible? Here I would like to state that it was Mr. John W. Dawley of London, who has been a Christian Science practitioner for 47 years and a teacher for 35 years in the Christian Science movement, has been a lecturer for 14 years in the Christian Science movement, and at one time president of the Mother Church, that through his deep study of the Christian Science textbook, his understanding of the seven and the four, had seen that the Bible symbolism can be scientifically translated into the language of Mrs. Eddy. Through his investigation, really, of the synonymous terms, he got such a knowledge of the ideas of mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love that he could detect these ideas again in the Bible, and in that way open the symbolization of the Bible in all details. Whereas Mrs. Eddy has given the key to the scripture, John Dawley really turned the key in the lock and opened with that key the whole Bible. By the way, it's quite interesting that this new view of the signs of the Bible, the signs of God, has been revealed at the time which was prophesied by Mrs. Eddy. Mrs. Eddy has made a prophecy in prose work in 1887, and has said that in less than another 50 years, that would have been in 1937, that in less than another 50 years, his name, that's God's name, will be magnified in the apprehension of this new subject. She was speaking about the new subject of the signs of God. And it is in those years of 1937-38 that Mr. Dawley really began to see how the biblical symbols could be translated into exact metaphysical and scientific language of the Bible. What was the findings which he presented? He began to see that each book of the Bible had an ordered spiritual structure, that each book of the Bible was not just telling any story, was not just telling hundreds of metaphysical aphorisms or truths, but that each book of the Bible had a scientific, but spiritually scientific structure. That, say, a book of the Bible would be built up through the seven synonymous terms in the order of the word, in the order of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, as given as the answer to the question, what is God, in the textbook. That you would see, say, that a Bible would start by, a biblical book would start by a subject which would depict God as mind, as the creator or as the proposition of the whole book, that then the subject would develop and develop through spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, to love at the end of the book, where the proposition which was given at the beginning of the book found its fulfillment and its perfect answer at the end of the book. Or you would see that many of the biblical books not only presented a structure through the seven, but as we have seen yesterday, the blendings of the seven with the seven. 49. That many of the books presented 49 subjects in an ordered way, beginning with mind as mind, mind as spirit, mind as soul, mind as principle, and so on. Then afterwards, soul as spirit as mind, spirit as spirit, spirit as soul, spirit as principle, and so on. You see, just giving an absolutely balanced sense of the numeration table of Christian Science. Say, the book of Joshua, of Judges, of Samuel, 1 Kings, only to mention a few, are built up in this balanced sense, teaching us really the numeration table of Christian Science in the language of the Bible. Or you would find books that were built up through the four, telling us first the word sense of the problem, then the Christ sense of the problem, then the Christianity sense of the problem, then the science sense of the problem. Or you would find other books which would combine the four and the seven, like the book of Zechariah, Daniel, then the four Gospels, as I have already mentioned, the four Gospels just showing Matthew, the word order, Mark, the Christ order, Luke, the Christianity order, and John, the science order. Or we have found books like Hebrews, who present the four sides of the Holy City in all their ramifications with the four. The four times four, four times four. So you see that what has been revealed through knowing, first of all, the seven and the four, then opening with this key, the symbolization which was used in the Bible, that we find now in the Bible not a lot of biblical stories, but a symbolization of the divine infinite calculus in all its variation, just showing that the Bible really is a textbook which teaches us the numeration table of divine science in all its aspects, so that through reading the inspired sense, but the scientifically inspired sense of the Bible, we really culture our consciousness in this divine infinite calculus. And you begin to realize, therefore, that the Bible is not a book which was all right for biblical ages, but which is a wonderful exercise book, so to say, for every age. Just as in a mathematical book we may find first stated the fundamental laws or the fundamental rules of a certain computation, and then afterwards a few examples of it. Examples which we can solve for ourselves and with which we can exercise, so to say, this rule, so that we can be drilled in that rule or law. And in this way we can look at the Bible. Having seen really that the principle and science behind the Bible is the most important thing and not its symbolization, and having seen that this principle and science is the science of every age, we begin to realize that the Bible is really us, that the Bible really is not something which has to do with Adam, with Eve, to do with Noah, with Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, and so on, but that it really has to do with man, with us. And so the Bible becomes alive the moment we consider ourselves as being a state of consciousness, which may include the Adam state of consciousness, the Cain, the Abel, the Seth state of consciousness, that we may find within ourselves the Noah state of consciousness, the Abraham state of consciousness. In other words, that we could see that the Bible teaches us when and how much we are an Adam, when and how much we are a Cain and a Abel and a Seth, when and how much we are an Enoch and Noah, how much and when we are a Ham and Shem and Japhet and so on. So that all these Bible characters really become our life story. So that's why the Bible is the book of life, because it depicts our life story. It depicts the true sense of our manhood and depicts all those suggestions and claims of mortal manhood which we may encounter. There is another point that I would like to mention, and that is that the Bible not only teaches the divine principle and the categories of the divine principle, but as we have seen, from the infinite one comes the infinite idea, and that with this infinitude comes spiritual rules and laws. And so the Bible teaches us the laws of God, the divine laws of God. What do we mean with these laws? You see, I have said that many of the biblical books may be written in the order, say, of the seven in the word order. Many of them may be written that way. And we can ask ourselves, but why many? Why should God repeat himself? Wouldn't it be enough to state it once? And so we may ask ourselves, why is it that we have, say, the book of Joshua, which is written in the 7x7, and then right afterwards, say, Judges, who is also written in the 7x7, therefore has the same structure of the 7x7. Why to give two presentations? Why not just one? Well, there are two presentations of the 7x7, but handling a different fundamental proposition. They always handle a fundamental proposition which is timeless, not just a proposition which was unique and only singular to a certain age. For instance, we would see that Joshua shows through the structure of the 7x7 how to proceed spiritually in order to gain our inheritance. You know, the symbolization is how Joshua led them over Jordan into the promised land, into their land of inheritance. Spiritually seen, it is showing the spiritual method, how we should spiritually proceed in order to take possession of our divine spiritual inheritance. Then after that comes Judges, which, as I said, is built up the same way, the 7x7, but it has a different purpose to fulfill. Namely, Judges want to show what has to be conquered in the way of mortal consciousness within us, in order to safeguard our inheritance. Judges shows historically the story how the children of Israel, when they were in their promised land, how they had to fight against all sorts of enemies in order to be able to stay in the land. Spiritually seen, it is that state that problem where we begin to realize that it is not enough, like Joshua, to take hold of our spiritual inheritance, but that we have to overcome all the enemies within us, namely all those claims of mortal manhood which wants to rob us of our spiritual inheritance. So you can see that it is not so much the structure that is important, if a subject is built up in the world order, or it's built up in the Christ order, or in the Christianity order, and so on, but that the most important is to perceive the fundamental problem of a biblical book. And then, when we see that, then, through the ordered presentation, we begin to realize the order or lawful way how to handle such a problem, so that we always can distill, so to say, out of a biblical book a divine law, a fundamental divine law. I have tried to show that clearly in two of my books, that book on the Minor Prophets in the Light of Christian Science, and in the book The Epistles in the Light of Christian Science, where I showed that, say, in the Minor Prophets, we would mostly find the same structure of a book, that they practically everyone is built up through the word order, mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. So that you could ask yourself, why to repeat that over and over? Well, the answer is that each of the prophets cover a different, specific, fundamental problem of the Christ. All prophets have one thing in common: they depict the nature and office of the Christ. But each one of the prophets, of the 16 prophets, depict that Christ nature in a different way, in a different office, because the Christ has many offices, and not just one. That's why we have in the Christian Science textbook not only one definition of the Christ, but many. So that each prophet symbolizes the Christ idea in a different way, meeting a different argument. So it is really the differentiation of one prophet to the other which is of greatest interest for us. And so, in distilling out of each prophet the problem that is fundamental to a prophet, we really can state that problem in a divine law, because God would deal with that problem through a divine law. Then when we can distill that divine law out of the text and put it into today's metaphysical language, then we can use this law infinitely, because we can always substitute within that law the term God for mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love. You see, for instance, Hosea would show the Christ idea as that which depicts that from God only good comes to men. Now, this law can be stated through the seven synonymous term and its idea in an infinite variety. How only good comes to me. How only mind and mind's ideas come to me. How only spirit and spirit's idea come to me and abide with me and can do something good. But if you take, for instance, another prophet like Obadiah, he has another purpose. He wants to show how the Christ idea destroys everything in me which is not Christ-like. And so shows through seven subjects of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love, the way this Christ idea comes to me and ousting out of me everything which is not Christ-like. And so whenever, say, you have that proposition that you would get rid of mortal manhood within yourself, of all the mortal suggestions within yourself, the law of Obadiah could be used in an infinite way when you have a knowledge of the seven synonymous terms and their ideas. Or you take Nahum, the prophet Nahum. He again shows a very different proposition and solves another fundamental claim. Namely, he shows that the Christ, say, in his office of saving men, is omnipotent and in handling evil. That error is not invincible. The claim is that error is invincible. That error can say, truth cannot destroy me. It's always that claim where it says, Christian Science can't heal this case. This error is bigger than God. This is Nahum. You see, it's a fundamental problem which is true yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And so Nahum shows through the seven synonymous terms how the Christ idea is omnipotent, how the mind is omnipotent in destroying error, how spirit is omnipotent in destroying spirit, that nothing can resist the power of spirit, that nothing can resist the power of soul, that nothing can resist the power of principle or of life or truth and love. Well, I have just hinted to what the Bible will be for each one of us the moment we open the Bible with the key of metaphysics, with the key of the seven and the four. How then the Bible will be something very, very much different than what these so-called halfway metaphysicians of today who reject the Bible think that the Bible might be. And so we could go through the whole Bible and see how a very different sense of the Bible is established within us the moment really we look at it properly. Well, I could go on and talk to you about the Bible for weeks and weeks. But all what I wanted to do is to pinpoint the main propositions which we have to keep in mind when we think about the Bible, and especially when we think about the interpretation and the meaning and the purpose of the Bible. Now, let me say a word or two about the Christian Science textbook. And when I say a word or two about the Christian Science textbook, I really mean, again, only that I can show some fundamental aspects of what this textbook is and how it should be studied. We have seen that the Bible, taken in the biggest categories, presents first the Word of God, then through the prophets, the Christ nature, then through the Gospels and the Epistles, the Christianity nature of being, and then foretelling at the end of the Bible that there will be a fourth side coming, namely science. The textbook therefore completes the Bible by giving the fourth side of the holy city, science. What is so new about this fourth side of the holy city, about the textbook compared with the Bible? Well, naturally, there are many things, but let me just state two points, namely, the textbook now states clearly and definitely and explains its statement that mind is all and matter is not, that good is all and that evil is not. Whereas the Bible still gives somehow the impression, may I say, somehow the impression for the general reader that there are still two realities in being, namely spirit and matter, good and evil. Those showing always that the good is more potent than the evil, that the spiritual has supremacy over matter, still the Bible doesn't make it clear textually for the general reader that spirit is all and matter nothing, that evil is nothing and good is all. These are the revelations of our age. And as we have seen at the beginning of this class, more and more reason and revelation begin to coincide in this century. What is further new is that the Bible shows how spiritually minded people would be the victor over evil. But the Bible gives no direct explication and interpretation of the science which underlies this demonstration. But the Christian Science textbook now comes and gives the explication for the world, for the Christ, and for Christianity. The Christian Science textbook can now look back on the Bible and give the scientific explication of all that which has been presented in the Bible. And so the new vision we get through the textbook is that it teaches the science of that Christ power which was always at work through the biblical ages. The textbook also is a book of revelation. The text has been revealed to Mrs. Eddy. It is not so that Mrs. Eddy conceived it humanly and was writing it with her human intelligence and with her human conceptions. She writes of herself in this respect, "It was not myself, but the divine power of truth and love infinitely above me, which dictated signs and health with key to the scriptures." And further she says, "I should blush to write of signs and health with key to the scriptures as I have, were it of human origin, and were I, apart from God, its author. But as I was only a scribe, echoing the harmonies of heaven in divine metaphysics, I cannot be modest, in my estimate of the Christian Science textbook." So you see, she states that she doesn't feel that she has written the book, but that she was just a scribe under order. God was dictating to her, or through her, the text of the book.